Lean Leadership Podcast, episode 59.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Today's guest is Art Byrne. You can't study lean and continuous improvement for long without coming across the name Art Byrne. Art's Roll Up Your Sleeves, Go to Gemba approach for lean and continuous improvement has been well documented in Jim Womack's book, Lean Thinking, and in Art's own words, in the Lean Turnaround and the Lean Turnaround Action Guide. Art shares his story and the results of his lean journey from starting at GE to Danaher and on to Wiremold and working with private equity. The title of our podcast is Lean Leadership Podcast, and I can't think of any other individual who personifies an understanding of lean as a long-term growth strategy and leadership by demonstrating that the CEO can have the most profound impact on unlocking the unlimited potential of enabling employees to solve the problems they face every day. Today's a treat, and I'm pleased to introduce Art Byrne. Well, Art, thank you for being with us today. We briefly touched on who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how lean and continuous improvement is a part of your life?
Sure. Nice to be with you here today, Chris. Yeah, I started my own lean journey back in January of 1982. It's my first general manager job at the General Electric Company. And I was running the high intensity and coarse lamp department at the time. And we just started a small Kanban system between myself and one of the internal lighting businesses that was my supplier. GE at the time, of course, wasn't doing any lean. It was all make the month or die, if you will. But we did this and, you know, we went from, my inventory went from 43 days to 3 days, and the inventory of my supplier went from probably 60 days to zero. So for the lighting business group, we went from almost 100 days down to 3. And that was nice, but nobody in GE really cared about that at the time. I mean, they just was focused on make the month. And, you know, we did this. What I found was, gee, quality got better. Customer service got better. Productivity got better. Shop floor was cleaner. Things were safer. Our employees were happier, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There were all these side things just from this simple Kanban system. And so I said, well, gee, you know, from now on, whatever I do, I'm going to try and use this system, what we call just-in-time at the time. Back in 1982, the term lean hadn't been invented. In fact, I think it wasn't invented until like 14 years later. So that was where I started, and that was kind of the sort of aha moment for me, if you will.
Well, that's a great story. I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit more here in the podcast interview. Before we get started into the deep interview, we typically ask our guests to share with us a quote or a mantra from a favorite leader. Can you share with us what your quote is and why you chose it?
Well, I've got a couple of them, actually. One of them is one from Henry Ford, which Henry Ford didn't know anything about lean either, but it fits lean perfectly. And his quote was, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you'll be right. You know, if you think about that, that's a very interesting one. The other one is from Winston Churchill. And Winston Churchill said, I never met a rich pessimist, which is also true. And the one that one of my favorites from one of my lean senseis, who was from Shinjitsu, was a quote that said, burn some. If you don't try something, no knowledge can visit you. And I always think that that's very appropriate for lean. If you don't try something, no knowledge can visit you. And I see company after company where they already understand, they already believe that there's only one way to do something, and therefore they don't want to try anything new. And as a result, they're stuck. They can't move forward. They're always going to be the same.
My mentors have really helped me out in the past where the three magic words are run the experiment. Sometimes it's just humor me. You're probably right. I may be wrong, but please, just for the benefit of our learning, run the experiment. And it works, right? I mean, you learn something every time you try something. Great knowledge, Art. I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Well, I think, you know, lean is more about changing people's mindsets than it is anything physical. And so that quote of, if you don't try something, no knowledge can visit you, was very appropriate.
And empowering.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great share. Well, one of my guests with this podcast, Art, is to help other leaders with lean and continuous improvement resonate with your experiences. So can you tell us kind of this, you touched on it a little bit with GE, but You had this one moment where it worked out. Can you talk to us about how that followed you in your career and where it's taken you, of course, your profession?
Well, sure. From GE, I went to be a group executive at a company called Danaher Corporation. This was in the early days of Danaher, where we had the two Rails brothers, and we had two group executives, myself and another, and that was it. And we came across the Shinjujutsu consultants, and we started doing lean in my portfolio companies. I had 8 of the 13 Danaher companies at that time. And one of them, Jake Brake, that was when my office was actually in the Jake Brake building, as was the other group executive. And the results we got at Jake Brake were so fantastic. Jake Brake makes engine retarders for diesel trucks, the big heavy on-road ones. And they were about ready to go out of business. And we started lean. And over the course of the first 5 years, we were getting a 29% productivity gain in numbers of breaks per man hour for the first 5 years, 29% per year, if you think about that. It was a UAW, and you know, over about 10 years, Jake Brake quadrupled its sales with about the same workforce, the same square footage of space, took inventory turns from 2 to 25, took, you know, lead time from like something like 82 days to overnight, all those kind of things. So, I mean, you know, took earnings from about 4% pre-tax to about over 30%. So, you know, just one thing after another. And, you know, that was a tremendous success. And then we expanded it through all the rest of Danaher. We started something called the President's Kaizen, where we took all 13 Danaher presidents. We took them to Japan for a week. We showed them a bunch of lean companies. We brought them home, and then we forced them to do a 3-day Kaizen at one of our facilities every 6 weeks. At first, they said, well, wait a minute, I'm a president of a business. Why the heck am I on somebody's shop floor moving things around? And the results we got in 3 days were so fantastic that after a couple of these sessions, the president stopped complaining and made sure that they cleared their calendars to be on the next one. Because, and the workforce, when we go to a facility, they say, well, gee, you know, it's really interesting that Danaher will send all of its presidents down to our business to try and help us. But we've been working here for 20 years and, you know, nothing's changed in 20 years. What are you going to do in 3 days? And at the end of 3 days, they would say, hey, wait a minute. You're not really going to leave tomorrow and leave us with them, are you? So it was, you know, that was what happened there. And Danaher, of course, went on to be a pretty famous company with the things that they've done, all from that background. Then I went to become the CEO of a company called the Wiremold Company. It was a privately owned company in West Hartford, Connecticut. Before I got there, for the 2 years before I got there, earnings had declined by 82%. So it was kind of like, you know, house on fire. We got to do something. And we started a very aggressive lean program. Over the course of 10 years, we were able to more than quadruple sales. We increased our inventory turns from 3 to over 18. We increased gross margin by over 13 points. We brought up EBITDA from 6% to 21%. And we increased the enterprise value by almost 2,500% over just under 10 years. So that was a really good success for everyone. From there, I went into the private equity world, where I was chairman of a bunch of companies, and we used lean in all those companies to improve our returns on investment.
So I have to imagine, Art, that while the balance sheet results were incredible, there had to be some morale boosts and people elements that just like people... It tends to expand upon itself. If Kaizen, when done right, becomes addictive and everybody wants to be a part of it. Did you guys experience that as well?
Absolutely, every time. And it's because we involve the people. Whenever we did a Kaizen, we had half of the team was salaried and half of the team were the hourly people in the area that we were working on. So they were part of the solution, and therefore they were happy with what they got. Whereas most companies, when they do any kind of improvement, it's a bunch of salary people doing something to the hourly people, right? If you do it the other way around, you get everybody involved. I'll give you an interesting example. When I first went to Wiremold, went out on the shop floor. We had a lot of different kinds of equipment, one of which was a rolling mill, because we were making raceway and fittings for electrical uses. And, you know, I had never seen a rolling mill, and it's a big, long machine, about 150, 200 feet long. And I said, well, how long does it take to change that over? And they said, well, about 14 hours, you know. And I looked at them and I said, well, wait a minute, you know, we can't do that. We have to have it under 10 minutes. And of course, they all said, well, who's this idiot? How do we get him as our CEO? Because we just told him it takes 14 hours. And his response is, it has to be under 10 minutes. So now, of course, if I had just said, look, go make it under 10 minutes. I'll check in with you. Nothing would have happened, right? Because for the last 10 years, it was taking at least 14 hours. But we didn't do that. We did Kaizans. We involved the people. We did another Kaizan. It took us quite a while because the machine was pretty busy. We could only get at it on weekends, holidays. And we had to make some alterations to it. Nothing very expensive, but we had to do that. So anyway, about 18 months later, we could change that machine in 6 minutes. Now, think of the impact that that has to people when they say, this is stupid. And then they're part of taking it from 14 hours to 6 minutes. The next thing is to say, well, that was really interesting. What's his next stupid idea going to be? Right. And so, but you get real buy-in and you get buy-in from the people. If I'm asking you to work 14 hours to change a machine over and I help you get it down to 6 minutes, you're not usually going to be mad at me, right? You're pretty happy with what happened. I mean, if you contributed a lot of the ideas yourself, you're even going to be happier. So that's a great example, and it resonates all through Lean and everything I've ever done in terms of how you get people on board, how you make change. And really, if you do it successfully or correctly, you're going to change the culture. You have to change your culture in order to be successful with Lean.
That's great advice. What I love is I just have this mindset of you being out on the shop floor side by side with these guys and women just changing stuff around, running experiments, trying to figure out how to those little pieces. I mean, obviously you didn't get to 6 minutes overnight. It was, you know, step functions along the way and a lot of learning and probably a little bit of failure along the way too.
That's right. But you know, the idea of, you know, being out there with the people, I don't know how else you do it. And I think, you know, CEOs that try and do it from their office and delegate it down, they're never going to be successful at this. They have to be out there hands-on. I always say, you know, if you have a company and you let me spend a week on your shop floor, by the end of the week, I'm going to know more about your business and how it runs than the CEO does, because they never go out there. You know, it's kind of like, you know, if you ask anybody, well, you know, you say, well, our setup times take 2 to 3 hours. I say, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. How many of you ever watched the whole 2 or 3 hours? You'll never find anybody in any company that will say, oh, yeah, I watch it all the time. They never do it. Oh, this takes too long. I don't have time for that. But if you force them out there to see it, and then they say, holy smokes, this doesn't look very good. There's a lot of waste over here.
Yeah, at a previous employer, I walked on the floor with the CEO of the company, and he knew the results of the work that I did, but he didn't completely understand what I did. And as we're walking around and I'm showing some of the different improvements and I'm letting the people that did the work that are closest to it, our experts, give the presentation to them. And then afterwards, I'm walking along and I'm bumping fists with people, shaking hands, asking them how they're doing. And he goes, is this bumping fists and shaking hands? Is that really what this Lean thing is? It's like most of it. I mean, that's where it starts. Yeah. But, you know, I knew where everybody's kids were going to go to college. I knew who was playing on the football team. I knew who had birthdays coming up. And that, when you have that kind of engagement with the people that you're working with and trying to help, then they're genuine about wanting to help you out. There's not a lack of trust when it comes to that.
Absolutely. That's a very, very important part of the whole thing.
Well, you've shared with us a lot of successes, Art, but I have to imagine there has to be a moment where things didn't work out as you planned. Can you share with us maybe what you consider your biggest setback with Lean and what you learned from that with our listeners?
Well, I wouldn't point to any one big setback because we never really had that. But we had a whole lot of small ones. I mean, you know, this is, think about this. When you're going to change from traditional way of doing it to Lean, every step you take is a form of leap, what I call a leap of faith, because you don't know how this is going to turn out. You know, you're going to move a bunch of machines around and create a new cell, but you've never done this before. What if it doesn't work? You know, what happens? And so we had lots of those. When we started working with Shin Jiu-Jitsu, we made a pact, myself and a guy named George Konensaker, who ran Jake Break at the time. He said, look, whatever they tell us to do, we're just going to do it. And even if we think it's the stupidest thing we've ever heard. And about half of the time, we thought it was the stupidest thing we ever heard. But we did it. And about half of the time after we did it, it didn't work. But the real key to it was we said, but we're never, ever going to put it back the way it was. If it didn't work, we're going to figure out how to make it work. Because we could understand what the mentality was, why we had made this move. We could understand that. The fact that it didn't work took a little longer for us to decipher, but we just never made it go back. Because most companies, if they try something and it didn't work, there's a lot of people going to say, see, I told you so. And right away, they go back the other way, and then they're done. You're toast. You're never going to get better.
Yeah, that's important in the sense that running the experiment, but being committed to it, and when learning from when things don't go the way that you intended to. But I love that, never going back. That's a great mentality to have from a leadership standpoint. Art, you've been around a lot of companies. You've had a lot of opportunity with experience. I'm sure you've seen some great things. I'm sure you've seen some not so great things. Is there a particular lean or continuous improvement pet peeve or something you frequently see being applied or done wrong?
Well, yes, there is. And I think it's really... you know, it's really a couple of things. One of them is most companies that start down this path, probably over 95%, they think of lean as a cost reduction tool, period. That's what it is, just cost reduction. And, you know, if you start that way, you'll get a little cost reduction, but you're never going to be very successful. And the other thing is because they think of it that way, they can't see lean as a strategic thing, as a strategy, as a way to run your business. And because of that, again, most companies will fail. They'll look at it as a bunch of tools or whatever, and maybe they'll have some success doing some Kaizen, but it won't take too long before the whole thing falls apart and it goes backwards. It just, because they didn't change the culture and they didn't do the right thing. They let sales and marketing continue to sell in big batches, you know, with volume discounts and other stupid things. You know, they force next month's sales into this month in order to make the month. You know, they do a lot of the traditional stupid things, and they're just not thinking about it the correct way.
That's great advice. I think what comes out of that is the old ways don't work sometimes, but so oftentimes, in my experience, we've trained our customers into their bad habits with our processes. Absolutely. And what we don't realize is while one part of the organization looks good, you have these little pockets of excellence. The bubble has to pop somewhere, and usually it happens closest to the delivery. So I can relate to that. If you could share something with our listeners as far as the most important thing that you've learned in your career journey, what would it be?
Well, I guess it would just be the simple idea that lean works a whole lot better than the traditional approach to running a business. It gets people involved. It creates a culture. And once you get to be a lean enterprise, you're awfully, awfully hard to beat. There's not many people that are going to beat you.
So lean is a competitive advantage, not just for people, but for the marketplace?
Absolutely. You know, lean is the most, you know, most significant competitive weapons I've ever seen. You know, when we first started working with Shinjitsu, they, you know, these were the three ex-Toyota guys. And we said, why would Toyota let you guys loose to preach the rest of the world? This is the most significant strategic weapon we've ever seen. And Mr. Iwata said, he said, you know, I can tell you about lean. I can take you and I can show you lean, but I bet you can't go home and do it. And that's always been very, very true. It's true today for almost all companies. They can read about it. They can go to a seminar, try and implement it yourself. You can't do it.
Even if you go on a tour, you have to understand the behaviors and the mindset that comes with it. It's just, you can't copy something in one place and put it in a new place. It won't work. I've taken groups through, I'm in Memphis, Tennessee, and there's a great Nissan plant down in Canton, Mississippi, that pre-pandemic, they would let anybody, as long as you weren't making cars, they pretty much let anybody come in and take a tour. And so whenever we were talking about visual management, I said, let me show you what visual management really looks like. Let's go take a field trip. And just but you can't copy signs hanging from the ceiling to make it work. You have to understand the intent and the mindset that goes behind it. But seeing an example in real life helps a lot.
Yeah, it does.
Well, if there is a leader on this podcast, Art, that's a little bit further on in their career, maybe they have a little bit of lingering doubt, what piece of advice would you offer to them in regards to lean or continuous improvement?
Well, lean is learned by doing. You can't learn it, by just supporting it or whatever. You have to learn by doing. And so to me, the leader has to commit to becoming a lean expert. You know, if you think of the story I told you earlier about the rolling mill that took 14 hours, if you hadn't really learned lean yourself, you would never, as the leader, you would never say, okay, get it to 10 minutes. Because you would, you know, that would be stupid to you. And you know it's going to sound stupid to the people you're saying it to. So I think the key advice is, if you're going to try and be lean, then the lean leader has to be the zealot. And they have to have hands-on knowledge. I think starting out, any lean CEO or owner should commit to being on at least 12 full-week Kaizens in the first year. I mean, full week, on the shop floor, very involved, not doing anything else, just the Kaizen for 12 different weeks that year.
That's committing a quarter of your year to improvement. And that's, as a CEO, like on the shop floor, in the Gemba, you know, doing the real work.
Absolutely. But there's nothing you're going to get a bigger return from than that.
That's great advice. A mentor of mine passed on to me is, you know, of the few things that you can't delegate, you can't delegate your knowledge, you can't delegate your relationships. Therefore, you cannot delegate improvement. You have to be a part of it. And that's the best advice that I've ever heard in my career.
That's right.
Well, do you have a favorite book, author, or mentor that you would recommend to our listeners?
Well, there's a lot of great folks out there. I've written a couple. But, you know, early on, the ones that I used were, I really liked Ono's book on the Toyota production system, because it talked not only about the production system itself, but it gave you a lot of the why. Why do we do this? Why are we thinking this way? And, you know, the book Lean Thinking by Womack and Jones was a terrific book, a seminal book. And, you know, one of the more detailed and good reads now is Jeff Leiker's two books on the Toyota Way. I mean, those are fabulous. And if you really want to learn the real detail, I mean, it might scare you to death when you find out what you have to do, but it's very, very good.
Usually anything that's worthwhile takes a hard effort to accomplish. So I appreciate it. Those are great book recommendations. I'll put links to all that in the show notes page for our listeners. Art, we know as in continuous improvement, magic wands don't exist, but if they did, and you could wave a magic wand at anything with a group or facility that you're working with, what would you try and fix first?
Well, of course, it would depend on the type of business that it was. But if it's a machine-based business, you know, where you're heavily dependent on equipment and setup times and all that, then you know that you want to go from batching to flow. You can't get to flow and keep long setup times. And so one of the earlier things you have to focus on is getting all the setups down under 10 minutes, at least under 10. You want to get them down closer to one or two. Because if you don't do that, you eventually can't have any flow. You're tied up with all these long setup times. And so any kind of business like that, that's what you'd focus on. If it was a business that didn't involve a lot of equipment, then you'd really focus more on flow. And how do you, you know, let's say you were trying to process a loan at a bank, and it takes now 3 weeks by the time the application comes in before you can give an answer. Well, what if you just took one person out of each department that it has to go through and sat them around a table and just pass the application around the table? Now you can have an answer in 10 minutes, 15 minutes. So, you know, you go from 3 weeks to 10 minutes. That is a strategic advantage. So it would depend on the business, what you focus on.
I love that. I've seen groups where they actually took the multidiscipline function and they sat groups around product types rather than their traditional, you know, manufacturing, engineering, R&D, finance. It's like literally putting a group, they all sat together in a pod, and their decision making was lightning fast. And it was usually better than it was with the long groups.
Absolutely.
Well, Art, if people want to learn more about what you do, or if they have a question for you in regards to what they heard today, what's the best way for people to get in touch?
I would say the best way is just by email. My email is very simple, artburn@comcast.net. And Burn is spelled B-Y-R-N-E. So artburn@comcast.net. I'm not the best, you know, technical wizard, let's say. I don't belong to any of the social media things. So a lot of people contact me by LinkedIn, but I don't do LinkedIn. So I don't do Facebook. I don't do any of that stuff, you know. So the best way is just simple old email.
And obviously, since you're here, you will answer the email. And I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Art, I appreciate everything you've shared with our podcast audience today. Thank you so much for being a guest. And I hope we can have you back again sometime again.
Okay. Love to if you have the time. So thank you very much.
All right.
Take care, Chris.
I want to thank Art for being a guest on the podcast today. I know I got a lot out of the conversation, and I hope you did as well. Be sure to go to the show notes page at leanleadershippodcast.com and check out the links and how to connect with Art if you have a question about what we talked about today. As always, I welcome your feedback on how to improve the podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure to go to podchaser.com/leanleadershippodcast and leave a rating or feedback for the podcast. Thank you for listening, and until next time, seek progress over perfection.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.